Young people tend to chase trends. They look for the latest popular snacks, scour fancy gadgets, and shop at trendy brands. Fashionistas, men and women these days, are apparently abandoning traditional high fashion, instead going for trendy streetwear brands. Yeah, so this is something that is a little bit of a new phenomenon here in China, as in the last few decades, since China's opening up, a lot of people, our living standards have improved and there's more disposable income, and people kind of went for the traditional high fashion brands. But it seems like in the world of fashion, one day you're in, the next day you're out. Chaopai or trendy brands, they are becoming popular here in China. So Lai Ming, after your studying and research,
okay,
what is the situation here in China now?
Well, first of all, some definition for those trendy brand lovers, brands that can show the independent spirit, have an attitude and unique designs are trendy brands. However, for enthusiasts, trendy brands are those brands whose design ideas are originated from the US street culture, something new, which is a mixture of elements like hip-hop music, street dance, skateboard, street basketball and DJ. These brands show young people spirits of pursuing independence, rebellion and individuality, and they're a combination of the subculture of young people. Actually, the development of trendy brands in China comes in four stages, according to the research we've seen so far. So there's this beginning stage where independent designers who love surfing and adventure would add the elements of skateboard clothes or work clothes into clothes to form a unique style from 1960 to 1980. I think that kind of shed some light on, at least on the idea behind trendy brands. I think, well, from where I can understand it, I'm assuming that anything that's trendy also has to have a basis in everyday life. And according to at least the early age of trendy brands in the US, that was people were associating it to skateboard activities and also the daily work routine. And also in the 1980 to 2000, U.S. soldiers brought the trendy brand culture into Harajuku, Japan, which inspired some Japanese designers to diversify the trendy brands. And I think that's the period when the Asian culture or the Asian people began to introduce their understanding of what it is in hip-hop music or street dance and those way of living in the U.S. And then between 2000 and 2010, as the economy of Asian countries developed, trendy brands first became daily clothes of some celebrities and then became familiar to the general public. And that was what basically what happened about more than 10 years ago, during the time when I think when I was in college and in postgraduate years. And then starting from 2010, trendy brands began to combine more modern spirits. That's a tricky concept. What does it mean by modern spirits? And then with the new cultural connotation, trendy brands are not restricted by the street culture and move close to the general public. I think that's when businesses have discovered the opportunities in trendy brands and they're beginning to invest in this circle, in this industry, and try to make profit out of this.
That is very interesting. Well, Tony, are you familiar with this skateboard culture or sort of, to some extent, even sort of like ghetto culture that originated from the U.S.? But I think it's quite interesting how you see that a culture grows and spreads, and then, of course, it
adapts into different cultural background.
Yeah, and it morphs into other trends and in shows in different ways. What do you think about this?
Well, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and during this time there was a huge influx of rock music. And during that time, the rockers or the skateboarders, because they were typically in the same group more or less, They were, there's a brand called Vans. And yeah, it's a popular shoe brand, but they also make, you know, a lot of other, you know,
apparel.
Other apparel. And yeah, there was another brand called Dickies that a lot of them wore as well. I mean, there was a lot of them that came in and out of fashion. And that's the thing with trends. Sometimes trends are, they're very powerful when they first arise, but they also kind of, you know, phase out in, you know, in a short period of time. So, but when I was younger, Vans and Dickies were huge brands. And on the hip hop scene, there was Adidas, because a lot of the old hip hoppers repped, you know, Adidas and Fila. Fila was really popular in the 80s. And then, you know, in the 90s, they kind of, you know, petered off and you didn't really see it so much. And for a short period of time, there was a brand called FUBU. Which was a very popular African American brand that just skyrocketed. You know, all the hip hop artists, you know, made references to it in the music. And then for some reason, after some time, it just kind of disappeared. And, you know, and that's, you know, relatively the trend when I was growing up. So, I mean, young people, they look for something that's just exciting. And a lot of musicians are, you know, endorsing it in their music videos, then they love it. And, you know, including myself, I wore as many Nike shirts as possible, even if it has the same logo, but if it had a different color, I would wear it because Michael Jordan endorsed it. And that was just huge for me. And I loved Michael Jordan as many people did at that time. So.
Yeah. And Michael Jordan, I remember his shoes.
Oh.
Super popular collectibles for lots of guys back in my day.
Oh, I still know people who collect shoes made by Nike. I think they're still on it. I mean, that Nike, the company, is still on it.
Mm. Yeah. But what's quite interesting here is the word trendy, because it sort of implies that it's like a wind. It blows in, and then in the blink of an eye, it's gone. Mm. And I think that's something of a challenge for trendy brands, so to speak.
Absolutely.
And like Tony has mentioned, what was that brand called? Yeah, almost
FUBU.
Like FUBU. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and also like what is quite popular these days, Kenzo. That's actually a French brand, and it used to be popular in the 1970s and 80s, but then it kind of disappeared for a while until I think less than 5 years ago, when it was reinvented by a pair of Asian designers, and then they made this brand hip again, trendy again, and for a new generation of consumers, they were educated. All of a sudden, Kenzo with the big tiger head and also a big eyeball that came out like a season after the tiger head, and then it became the hip thing. The must-have of the season. And, you know, so these things come and go.
It's interesting you mentioned reinvention because, FUBU was really big in the 90s and it exploded. And then all of a sudden it just started to die off. And then when I went to South Korea for work, I happened to see a lot of people wearing FUBU, which was so strange. I was just like, how did it get here? And eventually, I guess some Korean company, you know, took it and reinvented it. And Korea used their models and some celebrities to, you know, to wear the clothes. And then, a lot of young people were wearing it there. So I thought that was very, you know, very interesting how I thought a brand was dead. And apparently in another country, it's still thriving. So
yeah.
I think that's true. I think in the case of Vans, the shoemaker, I think it was a couple of years ago when I discovered that brand. I don't know if I speak for the whole generation or for the whole country, but I do see that all of a sudden, maybe a brand that was previously very famous in a different country now suddenly takes hold in a totally different culture. That's the thing. And also, we talk about how those brands will come and go like a fit of wind. But really, the group of people who are into trendy brands, they're always there. I mean, studies have shown that the young people between like 15 or 18 to 25, they are the mainstay of consumers for trendy brands. And, well, there's got to be young people between that age bracket all the time. Mm. And they always want something. I mean, when especially during my earlier introduction, that some people associate with independence, rebellion, and individuality. And when we talk about people in puberty, I mean, that's all they want, being independent and rebellious.
Absolutely. So, I feel like that's a beautiful time in our lives where we're just trying to figure out everything. And in psychology, they call it the identity confusion, where you're just really trying to find your place and find out who you are. And a lot of times you see and you find yourself through a lot of what you're exposed to, which is sometimes your friends and, you know, music, musicians, and what you associate yourself with. So a lot of these brands also have different energies with them. You know, Quicksilver and Volcom, these were also a couple of really big skater brands, is what we used to call them back in the day. So it's just, yeah, whatever you find yourself fitting in, that's what you invest your money in so that you can look the part.
And is it specifically associated with the urban way of living? Because we talk about how trendy brands had, or trendy culture had, roots in street culture. Mm. And is it purely in a metropolitan setting, or is this culture or this subculture also existent in rural countries, in rural United States?
Well, I'm from a rural area in the U.S., but it's interesting how a lot of these urban lifestyles affect all of us. And I believe it's a lot from the musicians when they, you know, they express how life is in the city, and it, you know, you watch it on TV and you listen to it. And these guys have so much influential power on the youth. You know, they bring it to even the rural areas. So it's like it starts in the city, but it filters out to the rural areas. And it's almost like it's like a smaller connection of what's going on in the big city. So it's very interesting how that works.
I think that is something that is forever elusive, even for someone like me. I mean, I am someone who watches the trends, but I watch the trend.
You also follow the trend. And you follow the trend neatly. I mean, when we talk about subculture and people following trendy brands, I usually conjure up images of people trying to look smart. I mean, in the Chinese version of smart, it's sha ma te. They have quirky hairstyle, and they have pierced mouth or lips. Mm. And then they have those weird styled apparels that I can't begin to explain. And I think that, yes, you have a right to make a statement in the way you dress yourself. But the way they are dressing themselves is like three exclamation marks in literary terms. I mean, isn't that just a little too much? Whereas in He Yang's case, I do realize sometimes she dressed herself in like a Sharknado t-shirt. But she never overdoes it.
Oh, thank you. I mean, that's, I guess, a compliment,
Lai Ming.
And there was one verb you used that would offend any trendsetters that you said follow. Because, excuse me.
Trendsetter.
But certainly, I do watch these trends, but I don't want to splurge on every season what's the new thing. And there's always going to be a few of these items that the fashion industry sort of markets and educates and plants that evil little seed in the mind of consumers that they want you to buy it. So it's like this season, it could be velvet. That is the really popular thing. Next season, neon colors. And the next season, maybe it's brogues or something like that.
Or a jacket that costs like 25,000 yuan.
Oh, I showed you that jacket.
You showed me that jacket, and I don't think see anything special about
that
jacket.
Actually, the picture of the jacket.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, I thought you actually bought one.
No, I am actually very careful with my money. And in the words of Coco Chanel, you know, fashion fades, but style remains. So it's most important to find your style. And in my mind, that will save you money and will prevent you from dressing like a clown. Because if you only follow the trends and it doesn't fit you so well, that could be an unfortunate scenario. But what's also interesting here in China is that we see there's sort of like regional differences too. And one thing, I think the trendy brands here in China and also around the world, in the US specifically, where this concept sort of originated, is that it's a bottom up sort of
movement.
Situation. Yes, and it seems to originate from the people in the streets, that they refuse to listen to what the creative director of Louis Vuitton that sits in the suburban area of Paris to say what is hip, what is fashionable next season. Instead, we see here in China that often these trendy brands originate in second, third, or even smaller cities in China. And we see there's Wusses in Chongqing, AMB in Xiamen, Harsh and Cruel in Wuhan. And there's this regional culture that's Chinese and that gives birth to some of these new trends. And I think that's rather unique. And that's something that I also see as a form of empowerment, because these days with technology so advanced, with social media, that you can almost sometimes just buy stuff on social media. You see what the fashion blogger is wearing, and mm-hmm. she says, "This is great, you must get it," and you can just click and get it. That just totally reinvented our idea of shopping. And whenever there is this thought that, oh, there's an opinion leader or somebody is wearing it and then you should get it, and there's just something innate in me that screams, why am I following? And then so here, I think what's interesting is maybe that these days power has been given back to people. And what do you think about that?
I feel like people have more of a connection with perhaps some of these people that are from maybe lower socioeconomical statuses, or people that are from, you know, different areas, in that, you know, perhaps they have a family member that was from that area, or maybe perhaps themselves they're from that area. So I think they can relate a lot more to people, so to speak, from the bottom. But on the other end, it feels like people are trying to become more accustomed to and try to get into that, you know, upward elevation of people power. And it looks like people are typically trying to move in that direction. But when someone from the bottom comes up with something, I feel like people have more of a connection to it, because most people are from that area and have moved up, for whether, you know, one generation or a couple of generations ago. You know, they, you know, I feel like most people have that connection, especially in terms of, you know, the hip hop culture, you know, in terms of, you know, young people. Hip hop is, you know, it's young, and yeah, it's rebellious, and it's it reflects a lot of how the youth feel about the world. So I feel like there's a huge connection there.
Yeah, here's one question for you, Lai Ming, actually. So in China, we've seen that in the past years that there was this strong penchant towards shopping at the luxury brand house, fashion houses. But now maybe we're seeing that changing. Do you think there's something that changed in society that made this happen?
Well, I don't know, but there are some figures here. In recent years, the consumption of trendy brands kept increasing. Statistics show that the global trendy brand market reached $60 billion in 2011, and the figure increased to over $200 billion in 2017. Now, this sounds very impressive. Now, make people feel as if this trendy brands are quickly taking over the business landscape. But in fact, I did a research into the global apparel and footwear market, and it turns out the sales volume for those two industries amounted to $1.7 trillion in 2017. So $200 billion, that's not really much, and that's not really impressive. So we're not at the risk of being taken over by trendy brands and people who want to look Shamateur in China. And yes, and also I think to echo Tony's opinions about how empowerment and movement of power, I don't see this process. I think there's a process of empowerment to them, because I think power has never been lost to communities, to certain communities. I mean, certainly the internet has been very efficient in organizing people and forming communities over the social network, and I think that's a process of newly constructed power structure. Whereas the people's lifestyles, they have not changed. And people would like to associate. People like to congregate when they centered on certain hobbies like street dance and those kind of things. I think that lifestyle has never gone away, and people have the need to form clans, to form communities in an offline setting. And trendy brands is easy to spread among them.
That's interesting. And for these trends. Or trendy brands, like we sort of mentioned earlier, that it could just exist for a very short period of time. I mean, what are the biggest challenges that they have to overcome if they want to stay longer?
It sounds like they would have to make changes along with what's going on in the market. Back home, there's a Victoria's Secret, for example, which is a really big, apparel and clothing line for women, but they've had to make changes into a sister brand named Pink to appeal to some of the younger people, to be more trendy, to attract more customers. So I think that it's just targeting a perhaps a younger audience, since young people pretty much generate what's fashionable and what's trendy in the world.
Yeah. Oh, there's this worship of youth, and I don't like that particularly. But as we see, Virgil Abloh, he was the creative director of Off-White, and he's recently moved to Louis Vuitton.
Ooh.
So, yeah. But, I mean, it doesn't make Louis Vuitton particularly trendy, though, I feel, because once a guy moves from the periphery to mainstream, is that cool anymore? Well, you need to answer that question, all right?